The most important question is who wins in a fight, Diamond Dallas Page or Stone Cold Steve Austin?
All right.
Oh, shit, I forgot
Randy,
about this.
You ready?
Yeah.
I should say Randall. Are you ready?
It's Randy's great. Go
Ty,
with
you
it.
Ready?
Always, man.
Timeout. Tyler, we're taking a little bit of a different timeout today, but who do we have with us?
Kevin, man, good to see you, brother. And ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, we have a pretty special guest today. This is a leader in different facets in many people's lives and in my life. This is Randall Thomas RT Ranimal Randy Savage. He's the author of a book coming out on recruiting. He has a new podcast in the sunny Jacksonville area, just kind of hyping up leaders in his neck of the woods. Randall Thomas, if you want to take a sec to say hi, introduce yourself, and I can't believe we're here, man. It's come full circle, dude.
It really has, man. And, you know, in some cases, you can say it happened quickly, and obviously in some cases, man, we had to take our time to get back here, but I couldn't be happier that we're here. And I've seen this podcast so many times on LinkedIn, and I was hoping the day would come that the whistles would blow my ear. So I'm glad we're here.
Well, here we are, man.
Yeah.
And you know, when I first met you, I'd never forget you said you were working on fixing airplanes.
Yeah.
And you might get slightly addicted to recruiting people. And I was like, I never fixed airplanes, but I've been addicted to stuff. So maybe this is a fit for me, man.
Yeah. Tyler's addicted to happiness. Yep.
This guy came in like he had 14 espressos, and I thought I drank a lot of coffee. And it turns out I don't think Tyler had one cup that day.
I doubt he did, man. I first met him, I thought I wasn't living right, living life right, dude. I was like, what do I need to do? Like, what's this dude's sleep schedule? What does he eat for breakfast?
What is his daily intention?
What kind of photosynthesis stuff is this, man? Like, I need to get in on it.
Yeah. So now that everybody's surrounded by Tyler, we all feel it, you know, and it helps get your day started in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, you know, when I was talking to Tyler for the first time, when I first met him, you know, he had just relocated to Texas. And so we were talking about recruiting because he was transitioning roles a little bit. And, you know, I had found a little bit of success at Modus when we first met, but, you know, I told him, I think you're going to be successful here just because of your energy alone. Like, I think people are going to want to talk to you. I think people are going to want to get on the phone with you. I think people are going to call you back when they get voicemails from somebody with your kind of levels of energy. And it turns out I was right. You know, he's been killing it for a few years. But I, you know, he mentioned 3.5 hours, me training him, but honestly, after 5 minutes, I knew he was going to be pretty dang good. I thought he was going to be special. That's for sure.
That's too funny.
Well, thanks for instilling that in me, Randy. I had no idea what the hell I was getting into. I was just glad people were responding to me. You know, coming from Kevin and I's world in sales for who knows how many years, all we do is starve for a conversation. And I think you have this coming out in your book, a few chapters on just different little nuances like this. You know, I'll never forget, I was doing like an IT help desk, and like 7 dudes reached back out to me, and I was like, told my director, I was like, Don, 7 people want to talk to me.
Yeah.
You know, he probably didn't know what the heck he was walking into with me, but I don't know, man, but we come a long way, Randy. And I know you've been trainer of the year in global IT company, global recruitment companies. That's no shocker to me, man. And
I
then when you
that.
Said you were coming out with a book, no shocker again. And I'd like to kind of, let's just kind of start there before we dig into your podcast, the PB&J in Jacksonville, man. If you
yeah,
could,
man.
I guess, kind of enlighten us when the book's coming out. What's the name of it? And then roll a little bit.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Name of the book is Intakes to Start Dates. If you're a recruiter, you'll know exactly what those terms mean. Intakes or intake calls, that's the beginning of the process. It's where you meet with the managers, you'll get the details of the role. Start dates, obviously, when you get somebody to walk in the door and start their first day. So the book's kind of a full circle, beginning to end approach to recruiting. I talk about the different steps, the importance of the steps, you know, why you should kind of fundamentally get it right so that you can learn how to pivot when need to from step to step. And also a couple of like tips and tricks I've learned along the way that can kind of help you, whether talk to candidates, get them on the hook, better understand what they're looking for, you know, ask better questions. At the end of the day, I truly feel what I'm writing here is something that can help people who are trying to level up their recruiting game or just learn it from scratch will have the opportunity to pick up the book, read it, and then, you know, advance their career in that sector.
Absolutely. That's awesome, yeah. Man. And sometimes you started this, you know, sharing tips and tricks, it was almost like, why am I sharing tips and tricks with people that I'm competing with? But then I learned at the end of the day, you still have to bring the motivation and the action behind it, right? You really, yep. No matter how much you put that on paper to me, that's the real thing here, I think, man. But you know, those other things, of course, the things that you taught me, man, in 3 hours when you flew in from Florida to Dallas, man, stuck with me. So I'm excited to read it, man. I'm sure it'll get right down to the point and it'll probably be super quality, you know, and when is that coming out?
May, June timeframe. So we got a couple steps of the process. I am very, very fortunate, very blessed that this is actually going to be published through a publisher. I'm not self-publishing here. So we have to go through rounds of editing. I have to meet with a designer. You know, we have to get the book cover taken care of, see if we want to put pictures in the book and stuff like that. If it's at my reading level, there needs to be pictures, right? Like, we got to do that. Otherwise, you know, after we get through two rounds of editing and get the design right, then we go to publishing and distribution. So, should be a 2 to 3 month process once we get the first draft turned in, which should be next month. And I expect a May, June release.
That's really exciting, man. And I know Tyler and I have kicked around the idea of writing a book, and then it gets into where the heck do you start and how do you finish ultimately. But that's I always admire people, right, when they are willing to give that, some would call intellectual property, right, or capital, others have referred to it as. And it's just interesting to me how much people are willing to give others in order to spark the fire, you know, set the fire under somebody else. And I think that really only comes with people that are willing to share. And I think that right now we've become so protective of what we own that I think it causes a lot of challenges, not only within business, right? Especially when you start talking about succession planning, it's like, oh my God, I didn't realize all the things that this person was doing. Because they almost do it by habit at this point. And I'm sure a lot of the things that you're doing have now become habit. But what are some of your like tips of success when it comes to training, right? Because when I think about some of those things that Tyler mentioned earlier, and obviously all the impressive accolades, training is one of those things that is a science. There's an art to it, especially when we're talking about multi-generations within the workforce or within that training. And then there's 7 different training styles or learning styles. And then communication kind of comes into its own with all the different forms of the ways that we communicate. What has been your most effective way to train such a diverse and unique audience?
Awesome question. Listen, this was a learned behavior too, right? I don't think you turn into a trainer overnight and then immediately, you know, figure it out. Like, I don't think you always have it figured out. But the number one thing, and I learned this from a lot of trainers and a lot of people that taught me, is you meet them where they are. Now, if that's in a group setting or a one-on-one setting, that might look a little different. You know, if you're kind of training to a group, obviously you want to make sure that the information is there. You want it to be concise and readable and digestible and understandable. And then ultimately you want it to be repeatable. And then leave the door open for follow-ups for people to kind of come in and maybe try to better understand the content. You know, and I'll give you a wonderful example of this. When I first started out, not only was I trying to learn recruiting or business or what it was like to partner with companies, I didn't know anything about IT. The terms, like everything about it was a different language. You know, the terms were weird. The philosophies were weird. Like how it all connected was weird. So they would bring people in to kind of do one-on-one trainings or at least come in and do like a whiteboard session or a lunch and learn. And I left the room dumber than when I walked in, because I remember just having like, there was one day I had a headache. I ate lunch, learned something, and left with a headache. And I was like, where's the value prop for me here? Like, but what it taught me was like, they got the information out there. They left it on the whiteboard. It was something that you could come back to if you needed to take pictures, whatever the case may be. But after the fact, I was able to reach out to the person who taught the, you know, whatever it was that we were learning that day and say, listen, can you break this down like I'm 5? Yeah. Just please. And so that helped, you know, that gave me something to kind of chew on as I went to train and lead other recruiters. And so that's what I would say. I would say meet people at their level, make sure the content is there, and that you're not shooting over people's head too much, and that you're making sure
it is that fine
digestible.
Balance, right? Because I think a lot of people like Tyler and I've talked about multiple times. Sometimes I use bigger words than I should, just because you're trying to show that you're more knowledgeable.
Yep.
Right. But Tyler has this innate ability to take something that's hyper complex and distill it down into a few words. And that's one of the most admired things that I have about Steve Jobs. I mean, I'll take out all the technology that he did, but how do you tell people about a technology that's never truly existed before in a way that everybody understands? And
yep.
You said, tell him, like, I'm 5 years old, and that's probably why I get more lessons out of my son's childhood books than some of the leadership novels that I read, right? It's like, man, some of these things are just so basic that we have a way to overcomplicate. I'm a big reduce to the ridiculous, because sometimes we think of it so grand or so large that it's really hard to break down. The other question I had for you was writing a book. You probably had to go down this reflective journey and actually understand all the things that you learned and then determine what would be valuable to other people. What has that exercise been like for you?
Man, what a question. It's been a road, for sure. And, you know, the thing is trying to figure out what I deem to be important to people who recruit in every industry. I thought was very important. Like, I don't just want to go down the IT rabbit hole or the engineering rabbit hole. Like, I want this to be digestible for the entire recruitment profession. So I definitely had to do a little bit of reflection to see, okay, which of these things that I'm writing about is universal. So started there. And then as I went through each individual topic, in my head, how much of this do I want to expand on? How much of this should already be common knowledge? I don't want to insult anybody's intelligence here, but at the same time, you know, I want to make sure that everybody that picks up the book has an opportunity to learn something that day. I was fortunate in advance that all of this kind of came structured from some training material I wrote, during the pandemic for the Florida team that I was leading. So being able just to go back and have like a blueprint of something I wanted to read from, and then kind of expand on the particular topics was helpful. But I would be lying if I said that a huge part of this wasn't like, okay, how much of this really did help me and how much of this is fluff?
Yeah.
You know, trying to remove that and then trying to provide the real value here, has definitely been a process, to say the least.
Yeah. I can only imagine. I'm a highly reflective individual, but like, to your point, you don't want to insult anybody's knowledge, but if you told them everything, right, it'd be a book the size of the Bible. I'm reading a book now, and it was by Tony Fadell. It was Build, and he says the same thing. He was like, I had to rewrite this 4 different times because I didn't want to leave anything out, but then I also didn't want to insult anybody's intelligence, and I had to get it down. I think it was like 500 pages, and he got it down to like 360 something. So
that's
got to be a really cool process. But ultimately, at the end of the day, did you see if it helped you fight off imposter syndrome any more than you already had it?
Yeah, I think it made it worse. I got to be honest with you, man. I've read a lot about imposter syndrome. I'm a mental health advocate through and through. And once I became a leader of teams, I really, you know, started to hear the term more and more. So I started, you know, doing some reflecting on that as well. But yeah, when I was writing the book, I'm like, am I really like the subject matter expert here? Like, am I the one that should be writing this? And, you know, I've had to fight through that a little bit. I'm not going to lie, but I've noticed throughout the course of my life, every time I've battled a little bit of imposter syndrome, it was only when I was about to be set up for something greater. I was never battled it during like a typical day or a normal function. It was when I was a little bit uncomfortable. I was doing something I hadn't done before. You know, I was taking a leap or leveling up in some capacity. So I almost viewed it this time as a good thing. I was actually, once I had a little imposter syndrome, it made me think outside the box a little bit, and it made me realize, like, I was able to reflect on some of those moments, like before I got promoted to director. Hey man, you've only felt like this whenever something great was coming. So let's embrace
it. Great way to look at it. That is absolutely a great way to look at it. That's really cool.
I appreciate that. It's very true. I've never battled imposter syndrome like during a typical recruiting 9-to-5 day.
Yeah.
But whenever it was time to like give a presentation Correct. Or teach somebody
you're coming out of
new.
Your comfort zone at that point, mm-hmm. and that's ultimately where we're really learning. And that's where I still look at this every day. And I was going to ask you a question. I'll let Tyler jump in, but life begins and ends at the end of your comfort zone. And that was just this quote that I kept looking at every morning as I got up and tried to motivate myself, as we weren't sure if tomorrow was even promised for anybody. And that one quote has just still stuck to me, but I totally get that. Like, that's where I feel like my imposter syndrome, if it starts to stretch my bounds or something that I haven't specifically done before. But then I reflect and it's like, Kevin, you've overcome each one of these obstacles. Why are you second guessing that you have that ability?
100%, man. I like I said, I think when you're buttoning up against something that's like a level up in life, professionally, personally, it doesn't matter. I think you're going to get a little weird. I think you're going to feel a little different. But I think it's kind of exciting at the same time if you embrace it, because it's, you kind of want to see what's on the other side of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. And
Tyler,
I remember
deep in thought over there.
Oh man, I'm just kind of Randy's day one, man.
He's got his thinking hat on.
That's when you know Tyler's about to distill some big ass message down to like four words.
No, man, I just for one, Kevin, I wanted to comment on my simplicity, man. I just don't know big words, dude. Yeah. That's one thing I was thinking about. And then two, I remember Randy, dude. He just day one, he was teaching this colleague of mine named Megan just the process of the morning. Like, this is what Randy T does in the morning, and it was like filled up with some things, man, like some action. And I was like, and in my world, it was like I just needed to be out action somebody, man, because I could probably do that. But like the actions I was trying to do, getting to the Jewish and the Italian community up in the Northeast, man, holy smokes, that was like going nowhere, man. It was a long, long journey, you know. But the action he was teaching this colleague of mine was like, and it was so immediate return. Like, it was what kind of got me hooked. And I just love the way Randy spelled it out for her, man. Cause I was like listening to him, cause I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I don't even know if I have logging credentials to anything. I had a deed, and Randy was like, it's the best. I'm like, really?
It is. It is. Randy still says it. I mean, you know that now though, you've used it. It's kind of the best. Super underutilized. No, I'm with you. There's a couple of things I want to touch on. One was the simplicity thing. There's a quote in the book that I took from Albert Einstein that I think applies here. And that is that, and I'm paraphrasing, that if you can't teach a five-year-old how to do something, you're not an expert at it.
Right.
So simplicity is where it's at. Tyler, the fact that you don't know the big words is to your advantage. It's to all of our advantages, right? And then, I just found it that this isn't even a recruiting thing. This is a professional thing. I think immediately setting up the day right away is incredibly important if you're a recruiter, for two reasons. One, you need to get the juices flowing. Like, one call leads to two, two leads to five, five leads to 10, one message leads to 10, et cetera, et cetera. You want to just take the first step and then it'll start to snowball a little bit. But secondly, and I use this analogy in the book, and I think this applies universally, which is, if my task for the day was to clean the house, and I cleaned the house top to bottom, and then at the end, I started my laundry. At that point, I'm kind of at the mercy of the laundry being, you know, needing to be done before I can call the house clean, right? But let's say I start with the laundry. I put the laundry in. Now the process is automated, and then I go clean the house. By the time I clean the house, the laundry's done. Now the house is done. So we're doing the same thing, regardless of the order. But if you put it in a particular order, then your day changes completely, whether you want to use that for free time, whether you want to use that for something more productive. So in the morning, send out the emails, send out the messages, get on LinkedIn, do everything, what I call do the laundry, so that all of that actionable stuff is taken care of. And then if you have reference calls or referrals to call or anything else that's more action focused, you can jump on that. So yes, Tyler was talking about action out of the gate. I'm
so
big
I
on that.
I should be making my bed in the morning, is what you're telling me. Like, that
you should.
Simple
yeah.
stuff. Yeah, that research actually does back up. That's fascinating. Randy, it seems like you grew a lot during the pandemic. And I think there was a lot of people out there that either took it as a great pause, you know, hey, this is great, I have no responsibilities. Yes, I mean, there was some unfortunate death and things like that I didn't have to experience directly myself. But like, what... what happened to you during the pandemic? Because I feel like that was kind of this the icing on the cake, or the at least that next step as to what was next for Randy. What were you doing during the pandemic when sales were down, when people were not hiring anybody at that point in time, right? There was a lot of rifts happening and people being let go. Where did you go?
And that was just transporting myself back to that. First off, it was scary as hell. Not even just physically, right? We didn't know any, like, especially when the pandemic first started, we didn't know. I think I was, you know, every time we have a fear of the unknown, it's kind of tough. In like most situations of late, I realize if you're in a sucky situation, you need to find a way that when that sucky situation ends, you are substantially better because of going through it. So I say that to answer your question. I worked a lot. I talked to as many people as I could. I went and got a SHRM certification at the time, which was a Veterans at Work certification. I went back to school at the time just to make sure, like, hey, listen, like, let's educate ourselves. We don't know how long this is going to last. Let's just go back. But ultimately, what I wanted to do, especially locally in Jacksonville, was I wanted to meet and talk to as many people as I could for two reasons. One, I wanted to assure them that they had somebody locally here that had their back. While their jobs were going to open up in a year or 2 years or a month, turns out it was a lot faster than we thought. I wanted people to know that they had somebody that they could depend on locally in the city. Mm-hmm. And second, it helped me get a pulse on things, right? Like, who have you been talking to? Are there certain industries that are hiring? Is there anything I should be made aware of? But what it did was that I think separated me locally in the market, because instead of being like, oh, well, there's nothing I can do, I kind of went against that grain, right? I just made sure I was having as many conversations as humanly possible. And, you know, to this day, I have lifelong relationships because of it. Also during that, when the turn happened, when the job market got a little bit crazy, I was kind of ready. You know, I had a bunch of candidates that were out of work that I'd already talked to, that were already, you know, vetted, already had their resume. Like, so I was ready to put them to work. And so when we had the bum rush, I was already locked and loaded and had the candidates ready to go. Yeah. So that really helped with the promotion part. You know, I was promoted to director during the pandemic. And a lot of that was just because I was prepared, I was ready, and I really embraced what the time was, even though it truly sucked. Like, I don't want to shy away from the fact that it sucked. I did not have fun.
Dude, I'm just sitting here smiling my ass off because I went back to school. I probably had like 900 conversations. It's the same time I met Tyler at 7:30 in the morning. But like, that was the same. I think when you lead with empathy, right? And sometimes there was nothing
100%.
In me. You know, it was just like, hey, how can I use my network for good? Not only for myself. That's not the intention of why I've ever built my network, but how can I start putting it to work for somebody else? So it's just amazing that our paths have crossed, and just seeing that other people were doing something similar all the way down in Florida, you know, and Tyler and I were here up in Rochester at the time. And that's when we started our show. Tell us why you started a podcast.
Yeah. You, full transparency, you guys inspired me. I'm pretty plugged in on my LinkedIn feed, and every week I saw you guys talking to somebody. And I thought it was cool. I thought the conversations were cool. The questions you were asking were different. But one thing I noticed was a lot of people wanted to talk, humanize who they were, and talk about kind of where they were within their company, what the company was doing and stuff like that. The more I looked around, the more I realized Jacksonville did not have that. So what I wanted to do was give a platform to business owners, C-suite folks, presidents of companies, people who are leading others, but also leading their industries, get them on. And I wanted them to talk about two things. One, I wanted them to talk about current state versus future state of their companies. And then the other thing I wanted them to talk about was, you know, what is Jacksonville doing for them, both good and bad? Mm-hmm. And ideally what I'm trying to do at the end of this is talk to community leaders, the mayor, et cetera, to say, hey, listen, these are what our business owners are saying about the city. This is what we can do to improve and make them, you know, happier to be here. What is your feedback, and you know, what kind of advice do you want to give them as they're trying to level up here in the city? So that's kind of how that came to be. And I'm very excited. We're in the beginning stages, but so far we're having some really good conversations.
So, and what's it called, Randy?
It's called PB&J. So peanut butter and jealous. No, it's it's Pioneers Builders in Jacksonville. So it's very exciting. The logo, we just wrapped up the logo, and the logo looks very sweet. But yeah, like I said, we're trying to talk to leaders. We've already had some government, local government folks from the city of Jackson. We've had some entrepreneurs, we've had some CEOs. And so, we got some really fun things coming up.
Love it.
And before these leaders meet you, Randy, the most important question is, who wins in a fight, Diamond Dallas Page or Stone Cold Steve Austin? who takes the belt, or is it somebody else?
Yeah. Yeah, man. If it's scripted, it's going to be Stone Cold.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've seen Diamond Dallas Page, man. That dude's like 70, and he's about as shredded as anybody in the world right now. He's in amazing shape.
All natural.
All natural. I'm sure of it.
He's got an awesome yoga video out, man.
Yeah, but, that's what I'm saying.
These leaders you're talking to, they'll probably know about your level of recruiting, your level of professionalism. I wanted to ask you, who was Randy T before you were even building airplanes, man? Like what was your upbringing? How did you get this fire under your butt, man? To do a lot of things and help people all at the same time as a high performer.
Yeah, man. Great question. I really think my upbringing has everything to do with how this has unfolded and transpired. So I grew up very poor. Like, people talk about growing up poor. This is a different kind of poor. And you know, it's interesting, when you're young, you don't realize you're poor. It's when you start to like go to school and start to see the other kids and go visit their houses that you start to realize your life's a little bit different. But I do remember at some point in my upbringing, in my teenage years, knowing I didn't want to be like this anymore. And I didn't have any direction on how to fix it either. That was the unfortunate part. So that's why I joined the service. So I joined the Navy when I was 19. I didn't know what I was going to do, what it was for. I just knew, hey, if I go do this, I have a shot, right? That's how we got into fixing airplanes, which is a really interesting story too. I joined the Navy to be in IT.
Okay.
It's just crazy how all this is full circle. But when I joined the Navy to be in IT, I went to boot camp, and they talked to me for my top secret clearance. You have to have a top secret for that. And when we were having the top secret clearance interviews, we were talking about, have you stolen anything? Have you done any underage drinking and all these other things? And I was honest, so I said yes to both of those. And I said, hey, we can't give you the top secret, but you know, here's another opportunity. It's a secret clearance, and you can fix airplanes. I said, let's do it. So that's how I got into fixing airplanes, which is how I ended up getting dropped off in Jacksonville, which is how I ended up meeting somebody that worked at MODIS, which is how I got introduced to MODIS, which is how I got hired at MODIS. And then from there, you know, you were talking about the fire in the belly. At that point, I just go right back to where I was as a teenager. I don't want to be poor. I want to make sure that I want to be the reason that the generational stuff stops here. And I want to be the reason other people in the family or future generations of Randall like can look up and say, okay, work hard, do it the right way, network, treat people well. And, you know, you got a really good shot at being okay in this world. So that's, I mean, a long-winded answer, I know, but it really was an interesting journey. I think everybody's journey is interesting, but the windy roads were a little bit windier. And I'm kind of grateful for them.
Right, man. And I had that similar story. I mean, like when people said you could do what you love, you know, I was always like, what does that even mean? And make a decent living, you know? Mm-hmm. And then now that I found that, it's a real thing now. I want to say, I don't even know how to explain it, man, but I do know that you were a cornerstone, dude, in my journey. I'm excited to see what the next, I don't know, 5-10 years, you know, what you build out of that, you know, especially with this podcast coming up, you know, promoting the right leaders down there in Jacksonville, man. I think they'll love you. You know, if they already don't.
I appreciate that.
You know?